prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Good morning, Truth Revolution.
Welcome.
Welcome. I'm Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
I'm glad to be here today, and I want to make sure you know that you are invited to Revolution Church.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to our show regularly, but you haven't come out to Revolution Church, come on out today.
Right. We'd love to have you.
Or if you listen online, or maybe you want to check us out first, you can watch us live online.
Oh, yeah.
So you can go on over to SalinaRevolution.com. And find the link there that says watch online. So it's really easy. You can watch us online, listen to the sermon, listen to the music, see what it's going to be like.
Yeah, it's a great way to test the waters in case you're kind of afraid to go out and meet really cool people.
It is. It's a great way to test. It's also, I mean, we have people who watch it regularly. We have a campus in New Mexico that watches online every week. And got to be starting one of the Marshall Islands. It's just great stuff. So you don't know what God's doing. We might even be starting some campuses in other places too. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, God's doing really great things. But we are here because we love faith and we love reason.
Right. And we especially love them when they get together.
That's right. That's our whole goal here is to take the Christian faith and say, what's true? What is real? And we compare it to what we know about science, what we know about philosophy, what we know about logic. And God speaks to us in all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks to us through scripture. That's called special revelation.
Right.
Because it was a very special way that God spoke. But there are what theologians call all sorts of things in general revelation. We know that God exists through nature, through his spirit speaking to us, through all sorts of other things as well. So
right. It's crazy because people, there's two camps. Those who throw out faith because it doesn't make reasonable sense to them.
Yeah.
And those that throw out science because it doesn't make spiritual sense to them.
Right. And we need both. They both are trying to access truth. And that's what we want is the truth. So anyway, we've been going through this Mere Christianity book using some quotes there. It's kind of a leaping point, mm-hmm. a jumping off point for our show lately, last few weeks. And we want to jump into chapter 5 here. And C.S. Lewis, he says this really good quote about what it means to become a Christian, to become the type of person that God wants you to be.
Right.
He says this. Did you ever think? Well, by the way, before I read this quote, I just want everybody to know we're going to do a Bible contradiction today. We're going to answer a couple questions today.
Right.
And we're going to do a proof for God today.
Right. We've got a really good show, as usual.
There's a bunch. So we're going to try to hurry through this stuff because we have so much.
Quit wasting time, man.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So C.S. Lewis said, did you ever think when you were a child what fun it would be if your toys would come to life? Well, suppose you could really have brought them to life. Imagine turning a tin soldier into a real little man. It would involve turning the tin into flesh. And suppose the tin soldier did not like it. He is not interested in flesh. All he sees is that his tin is being spoiled. He thinks you are killing him. What's the analogy here?
I don't know. Wouldn't it be like, God created us,
mm-hmm.
but yet we look at it like, oh, this life sucks. And we don't want to be here anymore because, you know, and you trudge through life because it's
well,
just...
close. I think even more so, God made us and we are sinful beings right now. Right. We chose sin after God made us and we are tin men. And God, when we choose to become Christians, is remaking us. But so much of that remaking process, we feel like, God, no, you're only ruining my tin.
Right.
And we
want to hang on.
We want to hang on mm-hmm. because like the tin man, he thinks he's being spoiled. He sees his tin getting ruined and turning into flesh. And he doesn't realize how important the flesh is
right.
and what it can do for him. And we are being made into creatures that are more like God. And it's scary sometimes. It's hard for us. It's difficult. And C.S. Lewis goes on to say, every man, woman, and child all over the world is feeling and breathing at this moment only because God, so to speak, is keeping him going.
Right.
And sometimes we don't like this. We reject it. We don't want God to keep us going. We don't like the feeling of becoming what God wants us to be.
Right.
It's hard sometimes.
Yeah. And the Bible says that in him, all things hold together.
Right.
And without him, you know, it's just a poof.
And actually, this is where we get our proof for God today that we're going to talk about. It's called the vertical cosmological argument. You know, it's interesting because God's creating something in you. Whoever you are, wherever you're going out there, He wants you to become a person that is more like him, a godly person. He has a plan for you. I really believe that. He loves you. I believe that. He wants to do great things with you. And I know that's true. Sometimes we don't like this God reshaping us because it's difficult. It's hard. Mm-hmm. But we need God. Every single breath, we need God. Right. Now, this is called the vertical cosmological argument. And this shows, is just another proof that shows that God exists. And it's going to argue that God is the one who continues to give us every single breath. He's the one who continues to sustain the universe. Otherwise, what would happen?
Everything would just fly apart.
It would just cease to exist.
Cease
That's
to
right.
exist.
Which is fly apart is a fine way to put it. The argument goes like this. Number one says everything in the universe is dependent upon something else.
Uh-huh. Number two goes, if everything is dependent, mm-hmm. then the whole universe together is dependent.
Number three, therefore, the whole universe is dependent on some independent being beyond the universe for its current existence.
Hmm. Some people might say that's a little leap, but let's go ahead and go forward there.
Well, they think it is a little leap.
Yeah.
It's really, I personally love this argument. There's some philosophers who don't. I really like it. I think I have ones I like more, but this is a good one. Basically, if you had to wind this down into a sentence or two, you would say, because everything in our world, in our universe, mm-hmm. needs something else. When you put us all together, we need something else.
Right.
It can't just be the universe. There's got to be something else that we depend upon.
We're like a box of stuff that needs something else, and you can't really find something else if everything in the universe needs that something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, where are you going to get it?
Exactly.
Outside
exactly.
the box.
You know, I mean, so take these, when you do these logical arguments, we've pointed out before, you have to defeat one of the lines. You can't just go, mm-hmm. I don't like that argument. I mean, if it's a valid argument, which this one is, you have to actually show that line one or line two is false.
Right. So I'm going to see if I can defeat one of those for you.
Okay, let's try. Okay. Give it a shot. Maybe, you know, we'll defeat one today.
Okay.
And we would be okay with that.
Yeah.
Because
we want truth.
We want truth. And we'd be like, okay, well, this argument doesn't work. That's fine. We could lay it aside. I'd be surprised if we did.
Right.
But, all right. Number one says, everything in the universe is dependent upon something else. Mm-hmm. Now, I think this is true. Dave, for instance, one of the things that you depend upon is water.
Oh, yeah. If I didn't have water,
you would die.
I would. But I do drink a lot of soda.
And now you need more water.
Right.
And so you need water. What do trees need to exist?
Water.
And sunlight. what do rocks need to exist?
Not water. Bigger rocks?
Bigger rocks.
Yeah.
You can't
get small rocks until you break up big rocks.
They need the strong nuclear force.
There you go.
Without the strong nuclear force, they would cease to exist.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't even be dust.
Right. I mean, everything you can think of needs something else.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing that is independent in our universe. So that being true, number two says, if everything is dependent, then the whole universe together is dependent. Now, this is one that people have a hard time with.
Right.
This is the one that they challenge.
Uh-huh. So what do you say when people say, well, what about symbiotic relationships? Now, I'm going to break it down
brother.
To something really, really simple here, but I don't mean it to be so simple, but just for sake of simple, because I am
you
a pretty...
You can be simple.
Okay. Thanks, I think.
I didn't say you are simple.
All right. So, you know...
I didn't say you aren't.
You know, there's these sharks that swim around the ocean.
Yeah.
Okay? Then they got these little bitty fish that swim in and out of their mouths and clean their teeth. Now, both of those things get mm-hmm. something out of that relationship.
Yes.
The little fish get something to eat. The big fish get their teeth cleaned, mm-hmm. and they're healthier because of it. Now,
mm-hmm.
that's a very, very simple explanation of what mm-hmm. I mean, but I'm talking about on a grander scale, you know. So if something in the universe can trade off to something else and sustain it and then get something back in return and be sustained, would that not upset the apple cart?
Right. And what you're talking about is actually known as the fallacy of composition. So you're a good philosopher there.
Say that again.
The fallacy of composition, meaning just because something's true for the parts doesn't mean it's true for the whole.
Okay.
Okay. If all the parts of an automobile were round,
mm-hmm.
you could put all those round pieces together and make a square
true,
automobile.
Yes.
You know, if you had millions of them. So just because something's true for all the parts doesn't mean it's true for the whole.
Right.
That's essentially what you're saying,
the
right?
The sum is not equal to its parts.
Right. Because, right. And you're saying, well, look, these two things are dependent, but you put them together and it's not true anymore. They're not dependent anymore because they've figured out a way to get around that. Let me get at that, okay? Look at the room you're in, or if you're in a car, the car you're in. If you painted half of the walls green and half of the walls white, what color would that room be?
Be like green and white.
Okay, green and white. Mm-hmm. If we painted all of the walls in a room orange, what color would the room be?
Broncos.
Oh, jeez.
Orange. It would be orange.
It would be orange.
Just for sake of expedience, I'll
get
us through that.
Don't say that dirty word on this show ever again. Now, all right, since all the walls are orange, it's an orange room.
Right.
Now, compare this to number two. Since everything in the universe is dependent, every person, animal, object, when you put them together, the whole universe is dependent.
Right.
Okay, you paint all the walls orange, the whole room's orange. That's just, that attribute sticks.
Right.
All right. Now, you're saying, well, what about dependent things, like, because they can form relationships that walls cannot.
Right.
All right. Well, when you put dependent things together, they are still dependent because this is a fundamental attribute. So some people will say, well, you know, just because the parts of something have an attribute doesn't mean the whole will have the same thing. And they use triangles to prove their point. What they say is triangles have three sides. But when you put triangles together, you get something different. You have a...
like a diamond.
Or a square.
You have a different
shape. But this means, they argue, that the universe might not be dependent. Because just like you put the triangles together, you get a different shape. You get a square. Maybe you can put the dependent things together and end up with something independent.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
All right. No, you're wrong. Here. The answer, being dependent upon something is a fundamental attribute. It doesn't necessarily coexist with our definition, but if we change, it doesn't. Now, I hear the music. Uh-huh. I know we're coming up to the end, and some of you are like, what a fundamental attribute. Right. What are you talking about?
Smoke coming out of my ears.
All right, I'm going to show you on the other side of the show why that argument doesn't work. Why dependent things will always be dependent,
okay,
at least in our universe. Okay? And we're going to come back to that. Now, all of you should go over to slinerevolution.com and get ready to watch our service online.
If you're not going to be here, of course.
If you're not going to be here live in person, yeah, you can feel free to come out in person. Right. 10:15 a.m., so it starts very shortly. Also, go to our website.
Yes, it's truthrevolution.tv.
And there you can donate to the show.
Right.
Thank you to all our supporters.
Oh, we couldn't do this without you.
Yeah, and also we got Truth Shots, 60-second pieces of information every day of the week, Monday through Friday.
Right.
So check those out. Hey, we'll be back after the break right now. Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com. That's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com. K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
This is Dave
and Jeff
from the Truth Revolution Show. We want to invite you to Revolution Church this Sunday at 10:15 a.m. Revolution Church welcomes everyone and every question.
If you want to explore who God is, come join us.
And bring any question you have, because we have answers.
Why does a dryer eat my socks? Can I get married but not have a mother-in-law?
How much is a long-distance call to the moon?
Well, we don't have answers for all your questions, just the important ones.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning at 10:15 a.m.
www.slinerevolution.com.
Truth Revolution.
And we are back.
Yes, sir.
We are talking about dependence and independence and can two things that are dependent in the universe come together and be independent?
Yeah, I'm going to try to do this quick so we can get to our other questions and stuff. So, so we said everything in the universe is dependent upon something else. So the whole universe must be dependent on something else.
That's
the
argument.
We would say God. You know, it's all dependent upon God. But what about triangles? If you have two triangles, you put them together, it's no longer a triangle.
Right.
It's a square.
Square.
So maybe when you put dependent things together, they're not dependent anymore.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Like your little shark and fish thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and I said, no, that's not true, because being dependent is a fundamental attribute. Okay? It's something that will always be with us. It's an attribute so element to us that we will retain that attribute if paired with something else that has a similar fundamental attribute.
Okay.
All right, but it's part of the nature of the object. The definition, a definition of something would be like a description that outlines your state of being. Let me give you an example, because you're giving me a blank look here. I'm sure everybody listening online's like, what? No. Okay, G.I. Joe. His definition is a toy soldier.
Yes.
But if you use it to pretend to marry Barbie, its definition as a soldier is meaningless, right?
Yes.
But G.I. Joe's fundamental attribute is a toy.
Right.
Maybe not. I don't know. We'll just say it's a toy. That's his most fundamental attribute. So when it's placed with other toys, regardless of what the reason, it's still a toy.
Okay, I agree.
No matter what you use it for.
Right.
A triangle. Its definition is an object with three angles. When you put two of them together, you get a different definition, a square.
Uh-huh.
But what's its fundamental attribute? What's more fundamental to a triangle than having three angles?
Well, having three sides?
No. The fact that it's a shape.
Oh.
And when you put a triangle with another shape, it still makes a shape.
That's true.
It's a fundamental attribute. So when you put it with something else that has the same fundamental attribute, it's going to have that fundamental attribute.
Okay.
And human beings, everything in our universe is dependent. That is so fundamental to who we are. It will not change when you put it with something else of the same fundamental value. You know, the analogy I use is just to give you a clearer image in your head. You put a baby in a forest.
Okay.
It's dependent, right? It's needy.
Yes. If you leave the baby in the forest all by itself,
bad things will happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Does it become any less dependent when you put another baby with it? No, you just become...
How smart are they?
You've just become twice as...
Maybe they build a little baby city.
What if you put 1,000 babies in the forest? They are not any less dependent. Maybe momentarily they're less dependent.
Now, have you ever done this?
Not very often.
But how do you know?
It, okay. You know, they just become more dependent.
Right.
And this is the nature of things that have dependency as a fundamental part of them.
Right.
They will always be dependent upon something else. And so the universe as a whole has to be dependent on something else, because it's only a combination of things that are still dependent.
Right.
Pretty fascinating.
Yes, I agree. I mean, if you... It's funny, because everybody thinks, well, I just only have one dependable attribute, or one thing that's dependent, but that's not true. I mean, there's so many things, like you were talking about the square and the triangle. Well, it's a triangle. Well, it's not going to be a triangle anymore. Well, then it's still a shape.
Right. It's still a
shape.
Yeah,
so I see what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the painting the walls in a room, you know, even if you paint, if the room is orange and you only paint half of them green,
they're still walls.
Exactly. And they're still a color.
Uh-huh.
You know, you haven't changed any of these fundamental attributes. You've just changed the surface things.
Right.
And our fundamental attribute is that we're dependent. So we will always be dependent, and whatever you put us with will always be dependent. And no matter how many things you put together in our universe will still always be dependent upon something else.
Okay.
So pretty interesting. I like that argument. Some people don't. I like it. Okay. What do you say we do the Bible contradiction?
Let's do it.
Bible contradiction.
All right, Bible contradiction today.
Hit me.
Comes from evilbible.com.
Again.
Yeah, again.
Hit me, Dave.
But okay.
Warning, do not engage evilbible.com without your brain engaged.
Right. All right. So, you know, we talk about judging. Nobody can judge me. Don't judge me. and you shouldn't judge other people. Well, the Bible says this.
Yeah.
But the Bible also says that judging is approved. Okay, check it out. Judging of others is forbidden in Matthew 7, 1 and 2. Do not judge or you too will be judged, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Okay, let's skip on over to 1 Corinthians 6, 2 through 4. Or do you not know that the Lord's people will judge the world? And if you are to judge the world, are you not competent enough to judge trivial cases? Do you not know that you will judge angels? Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's skip on over to 1 Corinthians 5:12. What business is it of mine to judge those outside the church? Are you not to judge those inside?
Right.
So what is it, man?
Do you judge or not?
Not to judge other people, or can you do it?
Yeah, this is definitely not a contradiction.
It is not.
Let's use our acronym.
Okay.
And go to the context. Okay. The C in cracked means context, and the D means dialect. All right. You have to understand the language they were using, the way they were using their words. Okay. I could say, man, I'm hot. And that would mean like the temperature is...
I would totally disagree.
Now, see, this is exactly what I'm getting at. Uh-huh. There's two different meanings for the word hot. Uh-huh. Like, it could mean a temperature, or it could mean that I am exactly what the ladies like to look at.
Right.
In which we know the latter is true. Okay. The former is not.
Whatever.
So, and what we have going on here is that word judge. You know, Jesus says, do not judge, or you two will be judged. And he is speaking of the type of hypocrisy where you look at someone and you judge their very being. You judge their soul and you think they deserve hell. Like this, and you judge their actions and determine that their actions mean they're an evil person.
Right.
He says, don't do this. And then he gives a reason why. In the same way you judge others, you will be judged. So he's giving you a practical application. He doesn't want you to think evil of other people. Okay, so this is what Jesus is giving us.
Okay.
The words used slightly differently in 1 Corinthians 6 or 1 Corinthians 5. Paul says, what business is it of mine to judge those outside? Are we not to judge those inside the church?
Mm-hmm.
So we're supposed to judge people inside the church. Now, do you think, let's just take this in context and treat it the same way that Jesus used the word.
Okay.
Paul says, aren't you supposed to really hate and hope that they would go to hell for those people inside the church?
Well, some people would think that's
no, but obviously that's not what Paul's saying,
yeah,
right?
It sounds ridiculous right. When you say it like that.
Right, because when you take it in context and when you listen to the words they were using, understand it the way they intended it to be understood, which is the author's intent,
mm-hmm.
You understand this is not a contradiction. They're getting at two different things here. Paul was simply pointing out, look, when someone inside the church does something wrong, you got to call them on it because they're supposed to be a Christian. They're supposed to have a higher standard.
Right.
And Jesus was saying, look, don't judge people because God will also judge you.
Right. So the first one is condemnation.
Yep.
The second one is to uplift and hold people accountable.
Exactly. So the points were totally different than each other. The meaning was totally different. And this is not a Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
Right on.
Okay. So,
It's crazy because that's a big one right there. I mean, a lot of people are like, don't judge me. You're not supposed to judge me.
Right.
And, you know.
And in fact, the Bible does call us to judge. I mean, to judge an action being right mm-hmm. or wrong. It does not call us to judge the state of someone's soul.
Right. And when you do it, you got to do it out of love and respect and with responsibility.
That's exactly right. So, we can judge what's right and wrong. We can say whether someone did right or wrong, but we have to do it in a loving and gentle way. We can't do it, you know, in the way Jesus warned us about judging who they are.
Right.
So, all right. We got some good questions in, and I'd like to hit at least one of these, see if we have time for both of them or not. They're both good questions.
Yes.
So,
all right. We've been hitting on these for the last couple of weeks, and these are really, like he said, these are really, really good questions. We are going from 10 to 1. We're at number 6 right now, and this one is just, it's a brainstormer. All right.
You think so?
Yes. If it was always God's plan to provide salvation through Jesus, why didn't he send Jesus from the very beginning instead of confusing and misleading generations of people by setting up a religion called Judaism, which he knew in advance would prove to be inadequate?
Okay.
Wow.
I think there's a few misunderstandings in this question.
Okay.
Which is common when you're attacking something to misrepresent what's really going on there. But first of all, I would like to address, he said, why didn't God send Jesus from the very beginning? Galatians 4 in the Bible actually addresses this very, very well. Galatians 4:4 says, when the set time had fully come, God sent his son. And other versions will say, in the fullness of time, God sent his son. Meaning, God was waiting for the right moment. It wasn't quite the right moment yet. I do this all the time with my kids, where I'm sitting back and I'm waiting to see, and I don't want you to draw the wrong analogy here, so just hold out.
Okay.
And I'm looking at my kids and I'm waiting to see for the right moment to step in and discipline them. I'm going to give them a chance to do it right on their own. And if they do it right, good, thumbs up. And if they don't do it right, then I go ahead and step in when the moment is right.
Right.
Now, don't take that analogy to mean that God thought maybe we would get it right. No, God knew all along that he was going to send Jesus. In early on in Genesis, we see that it was called the Proto-Evangelium. Right after the fall of humankind, God promises to redeem us through Jesus. But this doesn't mean that it was a mistake, that Judaism was false or something like that. Not at all. God was waiting for the right moment in time. And I think you can see a few of these. When Jesus came, the fact that the Romans had built this extensive road system, it was perfect for evangelism to spread throughout the world.
Right.
Up until that moment in time, it was very, very difficult or almost impossible for things to spread quickly by natural means, which God prefers to use.
Right. When he says that, you know, instead of creating Judaism first, and then when he knew that was inadequate, that's really kind of a misnomer, because God doesn't call that religion Judaism.
I'm going to take issue with this too in just a second. Don't worry. But the Roman road system was just perfect because they needed these roads for the missionary journeys of the apostles. Mm-hmm. The universal language of the Greek right then was pretty widespread around the entire world. They had a one world language back then, which doesn't exist today.
So basically, he was waiting for us to basically mature technologically, basically.
In some ways, I think that's a practical reason why God might have waited.
Yes, the human race is ripe.
Right. And, you know, and in fact, this is really interesting because he makes it sound like there were just, you know, billions upon billions upon billions of people who existed, and then Jesus came, and oh man, for billions and billions of people, they're just done. They're just kind of screwed. Yeah, but that's not the case. William Lane Craig has pointed out, actually in his debate with Christopher Hitchens, pointed out that less than 2% of the human population lived before Jesus.
Really?
Yeah. 98% of all the humans who have ever lived have lived after Jesus came. I find that astounding.
That is astounding. That's crazy.
Population was increasing, but just after Jesus came, population began to explode. Mm-hmm. You got to get this. You had only 2% of people who had ever lived before Jesus. And this is kind of a big deal. So now when you figure Jesus comes and then the population explodes, the Roman road system is placed, the universal language exists, it is the exact right moment for the spread of the news about a Messiah. Do you think that was an accident, or do you think Galatians 4 says when the time was right?
Well, it's beginning to look less and less like an accident.
Right. I think that's just a practical reason, but I also take issue with this guy saying that God, quote, confused and misled generations. That is not true. God did not mislead and confuse generations. And like you pointed out, Judaism was not some separate religion from Christianity. Mm-hmm. It was a continuous action, continuous motion.
Oh yeah, because Jesus himself was a Jew.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like he came to earth, now he's a Christian.
He came to fulfill what the prophets had promised and continue the work of God. Mm-hmm. Jesus, although there are different times, we're in the church era right now, and he uses things in different ways in different times. He doesn't draw some like dividing line and say, well, I got it all wrong back then, I'm going to do it right now. People often ask the question, this guy's kind of saying the same thing, just in a different way. Well, what about the people who came before Jesus? Aren't they just out of luck? No, we look back at the cross, but all those people looked forward to the cross. They looked forward, how is God going to save me? This is going to be great when God comes and saves us. I imagine those people who came before Jesus would ask the question, well, God's going to come and save me, but what about the people who come after the Messiah? What are they going to do? You know?
Right.
And so this guy's question is just totally off base anyway. All right. So we didn't get to the next question. We didn't have enough time. You know what? Why don't we do it online?
Let's do it.
If you want to hear this question, go online, truthrevolution.tv. The question is, why do Christians believe in the soul when neurology has found evidence that the sense of identity and personality can be altered by physical changes to the brain?
Interesting.
So is it the brain or is it our soul? We're going to answer this online. You can go there, truthrevolution.tv, and hear the rest of the show.
All right, come out to Revolution Church.
10:15 this morning. Mm-hmm. And donate on our website. Listen to our Truth Shots every day, Monday through Friday, only 60 seconds long. Really good stuff.
See you next week.
Revolution.
And we're online.
Woo!
Isn't that funny how that works?
I love doing the online part. I do. That's I feel awesome. Like you guys got special candy that was like hidden and you're like, I found it in my pocket and oh my gosh.
Yeah. And you know,
no one knows about this.
Ironically, that's called an Easter egg. Which is kind of like, you know, a Christian thing.
Yeah. That's so awesome. So, okay, cool. All right. So, why do Christians... Actually, you read this question. I'm going to focus my mind to give a laser-sharp answer.
All right. Here's the question. Why do Christians believe in the soul when neurology has found clear evidence that the sense of identity and personality can be altered by physical changes of the brain?
Okay.
Now, part of what they're saying is very true.
Mm-hmm.
You can change somebody's personality by giving somebody a lobotomy.
Yes, you can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they, I mean, basically, you can take a person that's very outgoing and very...
I'm going to punch you in the head right now to see if we have any...
Thanks.
Sorry. Okay, so there was a change in Dave's personality. Okay, not really. First of all, we are physical beings.
Mm-hmm.
God created us as physical beings. This is no problem. Period, end of show. No, I mean, like, we have no...
So you're saying there's a difference between physical and spiritual?
Well, there is a difference, but my main point is that we have no problem as Christians saying that the physical affects the soul, or that the soul affects the physical.
Uh-huh.
I have no problem saying that, because the fact that our physical body affects personality and moods, you know, when I don't eat enough, I get grumpy, you know, that this isn't a problem. God designed us as beings who are part physical and part soulish.
Mm-hmm.
We have both of these things. And we need to do an entire whole show on the existence of the soul. We've got tons of good information about this. I love the subject. But I mean, basically, you just need to say, look, when God created Adam and Eve, did he create a soul or did he create a physical being?
Right.
He created a physical being. There's no problem with saying that we're physical.
Right, because if he hadn't created a physical being, there would have been no rib to be able to take out of his side to create Eve.
Right. And so the fact that we're physical and that our physical affects our personality, that's not un-Christian.
Duh.
That's completely Christian.
Right. But one of the things they're saying is basically our personality, our id, or whatever it is that you want to call it, is that our soul, I think.
Right. They're trying to draw this connection that we don't need the concept of soul. It's all physical. I think that's what they're ultimately trying to do. And the existence of a soul, apart from physical objects, is very clear. We got a lot of proof for it. I think we should do that on a show on this.
Okay,
so maybe we'll do that in a few weeks or something. But J.P. Moreland, a great philosopher, he has said this. If physicalism is true, and physicalism is the belief that it's all physical.
Mm-hmm. It's the ism of physicality.
That was great.
Is it not?
You know, our cells and our molecules and our mind and the physical synapses, the electrons, the electric impulses, all that exists. We don't have any soul. He says if physicalism is true, then consciousness doesn't really exist, because there would be no such thing as conscious states that must be described from a first person point of view.
That's kind of getting into an Eastern philosophical type thing, isn't it?
No.
No?
No, not at all. To be able to describe something from the first person point of view, you need to be consciously aware that you exist, right?
Right.
Can you be consciously aware of your existence if all you are is a physical object?
Hmm. That's beyond my pay grade.
Right. But, you know, I mean, the whole point that we're getting at there is that we have consciousness, and consciousness is more than a combination of physical attributes.
Okay.
You know, this was actually a discussion that J.P. Moreland was having with, I believe it was Lee Strobel. And, you know, when people say that we're just physical, that there's no such thing as the soul, I always think, you guys have thoughts, don't you?
Right.
Your thoughts.
I see what you're saying, because thoughts are totally not physical.
Right.
Right. And how can you have those thoughts if we are all totally physical beings? You wouldn't have thoughts because those aren't physical.
At the very at the very least, you wouldn't have consciousness that could be described from the first person point of view.
Right.
So
let me just turn the light switch on.
Right. Yeah.
I get it now.
J.P. Moreland also said this. The second implication is that if you know it was only physical, is that there'd be no free will. That's because matter is completely governed by the laws of nature.
True.
So if we were only physical, we don't have choices. We only have physical impulses that are caused by other physical impulses.
Right. Be like an amoeba.
Exactly. I don't know about an amoeba exactly. I think they probably have free will.
Right. But it's
more like an amoeba.
Right. More like an
amoeba.
They're
just driven by complete instinct in a sense.
Yes.
Yeah. We would be driven by complete physical, only physical objects.
It would be a rock.
Kind of.
Possibly.
I mean, it would be a biological rock. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the other point, you know, just think of something. Your thought has no physical presence. You got neurons and electrons firing, you know, you've got your nerves and the myelin sheaths, all this stuff translating information, mm-hmm. but your thoughts are not a physical object that you can pick up and touch.
But would somebody say that maybe our thoughts are maybe electronic flashes in the brain and the communication between synapses and stuff?
Well, yeah, I think some people would probably try to say that. And I think they just need to be able to show that. Because you have absolutely zero evidence that those flashes are physical objects containing our thoughts. Okay. You can... Okay, try this. If you don't have a physical object, create another physical object without a physical object. Okay, if you have a physical brain and your brain is only physical, mm-hmm. create a new thought. You can create a new thought. Yes. But that would have to be done by another physical object. But you can't do that. If you have a thought, it comes from your imagination, your soul,
right.
somewhere that doesn't exist yet, and you think it. And then it comes into existence. It exists. It wasn't physical, but you've caused your brain to do something physical.
I see.
I explained that really poorly. Very poorly. But I hope you guys get the point. Hey, have a great week. Come back to truthrevolution.tv again. See you later.